Welcome to Zichu Daf Siman Mem Rabbi Avram Goldhar, and today we're Maseches Ksubas Daf Nun Aleph, the fourth parak, Nar Shinis Pasasa. The Zichu Maseches Ksubas program has been generously sponsored as a schus for Hachazachas Torah. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, the next Mishnah states, Okasavah Ksuba, in a case where the Chasin did not write a Ksuba, Basua Govim Asayim, V'Amana Amana Mifnei Shu Tanai Basin. A Basua collects 200, and Amana Amana because it's a Tanai Basin. Kasavah Sad the Shav Amana Tachim Asayim Zuz. If he wrote that he's giving her a field worth a mana, 100 zuz, in lieu of the 200 zuz, and he did not write for all properties that I own are pledged for your full ksuba, he's still chayv 200 zuz, for it's a tanai basin. Rashi explains that all his fields are guaranteed for the full ksuba amount, and he cannot say to her that she may only take from the field written in the ksuba. The Gemara will seek to determine who the Tana of this Mishnah is. Point number two, the father of Shmuel said, Eishes Yisrael Shinansa Asur Levala. If a wife of a Yisrael was violated, she is forbidden to her husband. Chayshin Shemet Chilas Ba'ones V'Sofa Baratzon. For we're concerned that the beginning of the relations was coerced, but its end was done willingly. Rav challenged him from a mission that taught that one of the Tanai Ksuba is that if the wife is captured, he must pay her ransom and she'll be returned to her husband. This implies that we're not concerned that the end was done willingly. Shmuel's father was silent, to which Rav recited the following pasuk: Sarim atzru b'milim makaf yasimu lifiyam. Ministers would withhold their words and place their hand to their mouth, implying that Shmuel's father could have responded. If he had, he could have answered, b'shvu yehekilu. They ruled leniently with a captive woman. The Gemara clarifies that according to Shmuel's father, a woman would only be permitted to return to her husband if witnesses testified that she screamed the entire time. Rav said, in any case where the beginning of relations was coerced, but its end was done willingly, even if she says, leave him alone, for if the violator had not been with her, she would hire him out to do so, she's permitted to her husband. What's the reason? Because at the beginning of the act which was coerced, Yetzer Abisha, the violator clothed her with uncontrollable desire. And point three, it was taught in the Braise, Shvuyim Malchus Harin Kishvuyin, Genuve Listos Enum Kishvuyin. Captives of the monarchy, which Rashi explains are women taken to be concubines, are like ordinary captive women and may return to their husbands. But women captured by bandits are not like ordinary captives and become forbidden to their husbands. The Gemara says that another Braise taught the opposite and then seeks to reconcile them. The first Braise was referring to Amalchus like Achashverosh, where the women know that they will not become his wife and therefore they act under duress. The other Malchus like Ben Netzer, who Rashi explains captured several cities and ruled over them like a king. Here the captive woman might think she'll marry the ruler and act willingly, thereby becoming prohibited to her husband. In terms of the bandits, the first Braise is referring to one like Ben Netzer, whom she might hope to marry, whereas the second Braise is referring to ordinary bandits that a woman would not want to marry and must be coerced. With regard to Ben Netzer being referred to as a king and a bandit, the Gemara explains that he was a bandit in relationship to a king like Achashverosh, but a king in relation to the other bandits. So once again, the 3 points are number one. The next Mishnah states, Okasavah Ksuba, in a case where the Chasin did not write a Ksuba, Basul Govim Asayim V'Amana Amana, Mifneishu Tanai Basin. A Basul collects 200 and an Amana Amana because it's a Tanai Basin. Kasavah Sad the Shav Amana Tachim Asayim Zuz. Okasavah Kon the Chasin De'esin Achrayin Uksuba Sikh. If he wrote that he's giving her a field worth a mana, 100 zuz, in lieu of the 200 zuz, and he did not write for all properties that I own are pledged for your full ksuba, he's still chayv 200 zuz, for it's a tanai basin. Rashi explains that all his fields are guaranteed for the full ksuba amount, and he cannot say to her that she may only take from the field written in the ksuba. The Gemara will seek to determine who the Tana of this Mishnah is. Point number two, the father of Shmuel said, Eishes Yisrael Shinansa Asur Levala. If a wife of a Yisrael was violated, she is forbidden to her husband. Chayshin Shemet Chilas Ba'ones V'Sofa Baratzon. For we're concerned that the beginning of the relations was coerced, but its end was done willingly. Rav challenged him from a mission that taught that one of the Tanai Ksuba is that if the wife is captured, he must pay her ransom and she'll be returned to her husband. This implies that we're not concerned that the end was done willingly. Shmuel's father was silent, to which Rav recited the following pasuk: Sarim atzru b'milim makaf yasimu lifiyam. Ministers would withhold their words and place their hand to their mouth, implying that Shmuel's father could have responded. If he had, he could have answered, b'shvu yehekilu. They ruled leniently with a captive woman. The Gemara clarifies that according to Shmuel's father, a woman would only be permitted to return to her husband if witnesses testified that she screamed the entire time. Rav said, in any case where the beginning of relations was coerced, but its end was done willingly, even if she says, leave him alone, for if the violator had not been with her, she would hire him out to do so, she's permitted to her husband. What's the reason? Because at the beginning of the act which was coerced, Yetzer Abisha, the violator clothed her with uncontrollable desire. And point three, it was taught in the Braise, Shvuyim Malchus Harin Keshvuyin, Genuve Listos Enum Keshvuyin. Captives of the monarchy, which Rashi explains are women taken to be concubines, are like ordinary captive women and may return to their husbands. But women captured by bandits are not like ordinary captives and become forbidden to their husbands. The Gemara says that another Braise taught the opposite and then seeks to reconcile them. The first Braise was referring to a Malchus like Achashverosh, where the women know that they will not become his wife and therefore they act under duress. The other Malchus like Ben-Netzer, who Rashi explains captured several cities and ruled over them like a king. Here the captive woman might think she'll marry the ruler and act willingly, thereby becoming prohibited to her husband. In terms of the bandits, the first Braise is referring to one like Ben-Netzer, whom she might hope to marry, whereas the second Braise is referring to ordinary bandits that a woman would not want to marry and must be coerced. With regard to Ben-Netzer being referred to as a king and a bandit, the Gemara explains that he was a bandit in relationship to a king like Achashverosh, but a king in relation to the other bandits. All right, so now we go to our Simmer Daf Nun Aleph, and our standard Simmer is beavers, because beavers gnaw, Nun Aleph, they gnaw. So therefore, we use beavers, and we often use beaver pelt hats in the Simmer. So here goes. The beaver pelt hat salesman, who didn't write a ksuba for his wife, but still owed her 200 zuz, built a big dam to block men from violating her, so she would not come to act willingly, but didn't anticipate Ben Beaver, the king of the beaver belt community, capturing her, whom she might hope to marry. Once again, slow motion. The beaver pelt hat salesman, beaver pelts, that must mean we're a duff. No, no, no. The beaver pelt hat salesman, who didn't write a ksuba for his wife, but still owed her 200 zuz, which reminds us, the next mission states, that in the case where the chassan didn't write a ksuba, a basul collects 200 and an almana a mana, because that's a tanai, a basin. So, the beaver pelt hat salesman, who didn't write a ksuba for his wife, but still owed 200 zuz, built a big dam to block men from violating her, so she would not come to act willingly. Which reminds us, it's a malchokas if a wife of a Yisrael is violated, whether she becomes forbidden to her husband. Avuya de Shmuel, Shmuel's father says that since the end of the act could have been done beratzon, willingly, she's forbidden. And Rava says that even if the end of the act was done beratzon, we would say that the Yetzer overcame her. So the beaver pelt hat salesman, who didn't write a ksuba for his wife, but still owed 200 zuz, built a big dam to block men from violating her, so she would not come to act willingly, but didn't anticipate Ben Beaver, the king of the beaver belt community, capturing her, whom she might hope to marry. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Braise, Shvuyim Malchus Harin Keshvuyin, Genuvei Listos Enum Keshvuyin. Captives in the monarchy, which Rashi explains are women taken to be concubines, are like ordinary captive women and may return to their husbands. But women captured by bandits are not like ordinary captives and become forbidden to their husbands. The Gemara says that another Braise taught the opposite and then seeks to reconcile them. The first Braise is referring to a Malchus like Achashverosh, where the women know that they will not become his wife and therefore they act under duress. The other Malchus is like Ben-Netzer, who Rashi explains captured several cities and ruled over them like a king. Here the captive woman might think she'll marry the ruler and act willingly, thereby becoming prohibited to her husband. So once again, the beaver-pelt hat salesman, who didn't write a ksuba for his wife, but still owed her 200 zuz, built a big dam to block men from violating her, so she would not come to act willingly, but didn't anticipate Ben Beaver, the king of the beaver-pelt community, capturing her, whom she might hope to marry. All right, now it's time for four blot back chazara. Daf Mem Zayin. So the Simmer Daf Mem Zayin is a maze. So here goes. The corn maze property the daughter inherited, that her father had no rights to, was acquired by her chassan with her parents Ksus and Kalim when she unexpectedly passed away after Erison, after getting lost in the maze, just as the Rav was preparing the ksuba and was writing the words Shera Ksusa Va'onasa. Once again, in slow motion. The corn maze property maze, that must mean we're on Daf Mem Zayin. The corn maze property the daughter inherited, that her father had no rights to, which reminds us, we have a machlokas if a father can consume the produce from his daughter's properties. So, the corn maze property the daughter inherited, that her father had no rights to, was acquired by her chassan with her parents Ksus and Kalim, when she unexpectedly passed away after Erison, when she got lost in the maze, which reminds us, we have machlokas whether a chassan has the rights to parents Ksus and Kalim if the kala dies before Nisuin, and the Gemara compares this machlokas to the machlokas whether a kala gets the Tosefes Ksuba when the chassan dies after Erison. So the corn maze property the daughter inherited, that her father had no rights to, was acquired by her chassan with her parents Ksus and Kalim when she unexpectedly passed away after Erison, when she got lost in the maze, just as the Rav was preparing the Ksuba and was writing the words Shera Ksusa Va'onasa, which reminds us we have different opinions regarding the meaning of the terms Shera Ksusa Va'onasa. Daf Memches, so the Simmer Daf Memches is Brainiac. So here goes. The Brainiacs. Brainiacs, that must be one of Memches. The Brainiacs who got hired to play the flute and to do the lamenting at a wife's burial were so horrible. Which reminds us, we have Malchukas if a husband is required to provide flutes and a lamenter at his wife's burial. The Gemara says that the Malchukas is in a case where it's the husband's custom to have the flute and a lamenter at a woman's funeral, but it's not her family's custom. The Tanakhama holds, when we say that a woman rises to her husband's status but does not descend to it, this applies in her life, but not after her death. Rav Yudah holds this principle applies even after her death. So, the Brainiacs who got hired to play the flute and to do the lamenting at a wife's burial were so horrible that the woman's father went insane, requiring Beis Din to organize support for his wife and children from his property. Which reminds me, Rav Chisda said in the name of Mar Ukva, when he went insane, Beis Din goes down to his property and supports and maintains his wife and his sons and daughters, because we assume the father who went crazy would have wanted to support his children. This is different than a father who travels overseas. Since he could have arranged support for his children before departing, but did not, it indicates that he does not want to support them in his absence. Nonetheless, he must support his wife, because that's one of the Tanai Kesuba. So the Brainiacs who got hired to play the flute and to do the lamenting at a wife's burial were so horrible that the woman's father went insane, requiring Beis Din to organize support for his wife and children from his property. And her sister died from shock right after she had been handed over to the husband's shluchim, enabling her husband to retain her dowry. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Masa Avu Shluchei Abal Hari Brishu Sabal. Once the father has handed his daughter over to the husband's agents, she is in her husband's rishus. There's a machlokes regarding what it means that she's in his rishus, and the Braisa refutes every opinion except for Shmuel's, who says it's regarding her Yerusha, that the delivery is only effective for her inheritance. If she dies on the way, her husband retains the dowry. Daf Mem Tes. So the Simmer Daf Mem Tes is a butcher because it relates to meat. So here goes. The butcher's daughter butcher. That must mean we're on Daf Mem Tes. Meat. The butcher's daughter who arrived back at her father's shop when her husband died while she was traveling with the shluchim, which reminds us, we learned that a kala given over to the husband's shluchim, if she returns to her father's house before reaching her husband, she does not revert to original state of being in his rishus. We learned this from the pasuk neder almana ugrusha kol asher asa al nafsha yekum aleha. But the neder of an almana or grusha, anything she prohibited upon herself, shall be binding upon her. Now, what's this coming to teach? As it's obvious that once a woman is an almana or divorce, that her nadarim are her own. Rather, it's to teach that if the girl was handed over to the shluchei abal and she was widowed or divorced while on the way, once a daughter leaves her father's rishus for any length of time, he can no longer annul her vows. So, the butcher's daughter who arrived back at her father's shop when her husband died while she was traveling with the shluchim was resentful to her father, who only fed her growing up, because it was a mitzvah. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Av eino chayv b'mezonos bito, a father's not chayv to provide for his daughter's sustenance while he's still alive. The Gemara says that this implies that he is chayv in his son's sustenance, and even with regard to his daughter, there's no chiyuv, but it is a mitzvah to provide for her. The Gemara asks who the Tana of the Mishnah is, given that it seemingly cannot be any of the three Tanaim mentioned in a Braisa. So the butcher's daughter who arrived back at her father's shop when her husband died while she was traveling with his shluchim was resentful to her father, who only fed her growing up because it was a mitzvah. And that was only after Beis Din shamed him when she was a minor, calling him worse than a raven. Which reminds us, the Rabbanan only shame fathers who do not want to support the young children. They do not compel them to support them. Rav Chisda would have someone announce on a turned over mortar that such a father is worse than a raven who wants its young, and this man does not want its young. The Gemara clarifies that the announcer is referring to black ravens, for when the ravens are young and white, the parents do not feed them, and they must turn to Hashem. Daf Nun, so the Simmer Daf Nun is a nincompoop. So here goes. The moneyless nincompoop. Nincompoop? That must mean we're on Daf Nun. The moneyless nincompoop who couldn't figure out why his first tithe didn't equal his second tithe, nor his tenth tithe, which reminds us, Rabbi Elah said, "Be'usha iskinu hamizbazbez, al yizbazbez yosem echomesh." In Usha, the Chamim enacted, the one who gives generously to a tzedakah should not give more generously than a fifth. Rashi explains that he should not give more than a fifth, so that he should not come himself to need others. The pasuk states that Yaakov Avinu said, "V'ko asher titan li aser asaren alach," and all that you will give me tithe, and I shall tithe it to you. Rashi explains that the two mentions of tithes implies one-fifth. So the moneyless nincompoop who couldn't figure out why his first tithe didn't equal his second tithe, nor his tenth tithe, tried to hire a five-year-old weak but learned child to explain it to him. Which reminds us, we have a question whether teaching Torah to a child less than 6 years old will weaken him and be harmful to his health, or it will develop him and put him ahead of his peers. So the moneyless nincompoop who couldn't figure out why his first tithe didn't equal his second tithe, nor his 10th tithe, tried to hire a 5-year-old weak but learned child to explain it to him. But he was busy telling his older sister that just as he collects ksubas benin dechrin only from land, so too she is sustained from their father's property, which is land. Which reminds us, Rabbi Hamnuna said, just as sons inherit only from real property, referring to karka, so too the daughters are only sustained from real property. The Gemara clarifies that he was referring to the sons inheriting the ksubas benin dechrin. All right, so now it's time to conclude with our 10-question pop quiz. Number one, which definitely have a question whether one's child should start to learn Torah before the age of 6, that's on Duff? None. Good. Number 2. Which Duff do we learn captives of the Melech are like Shvuim and permitted to their husbands, but captives of bandits are not? That's on Duff? None off. Good. Number 3. Which Duff do we learn that once a daughter is given over to her chasen shluchim, if she returns home before reaching her chasen, she does not revert to her father's rishus? That's on Duff? Mem test. Good. Number 4. Which the thing when the one should not give more than 1/5 to Meiser? That's on Duff? None. Good. Number 5. Which the thing from Malchokas whether Yisrael's wife who was violated becomes forbidden to her husband out of concern that the end of the act was Baratzon? That's on Duff? None off. Good. Number 6. Which the thing we have different shitas regarding one's responsibility to feed his daughter? That's on Duff? Mem test. Good. Number 7. Which stuff do we have different opinions regarding the meaning of the words Sherek Susa Vonasa? That's on Duff? Mem Zayin. Good. Number 8. Which stuff do we have when the Rabban would shame fathers who did not support their young children? That's on Duff? Mem test. Good. Number 9. Which stuff do we have when that even if one does not write a ksuba for his wife, she still collects her ksuba since it's a Tanai based in? That's on Duff? None off. Good. And number 10, which stuff do you learn that just as sons inherit the ksubas benin dechrin from land, daughters are sustained from land? That's on Duff? None. Excellent. That concludes today's shiur. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldham Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.